One of the great things about doing podcasts, media, radio shows is getting to meet great people. And I wish I could say I'm meeting a great person, but I'm not. And it's not that you're not a great person. It's just that I'm not meeting you for the first time. I've known you for a very long time.
Extremely long.
And I don't want to get into the whole story because we're going to do a whole podcast together. But I do want to talk about when we first met.
Right.
If I had to guess what you did for a living, doctor would be somewhere low on the list.
That's everybody's conclusion, yes.
Yeah, and sitting here right now, I'm looking at you and I'm going, yeah, now you look like a doctor. But back then, you would come into my health club and you didn't dress like we'd expect a doctor to dress. Even the workout clothes that you wore didn't look like doctor workout clothes.
No, they did not.
And the stuff that you did in terms of your workout were not doctor-y kind of stuff.
Correct.
So I don't want to stereotype doctors, but I've known you for a long time is
yes,
my point.
Have.
I think back to when we first met.
Yes.
So
many moons ago.
Yeah, and I always thought highly of you as a doctor.
Thank you.
Because you always cared about people.
First and foremost, absolutely.
And I think every doctor goes to pre-med or takes a pre-med curriculum because they care about people.
Absolutely.
And then they go to medical school, and you'll stop me if I get off course here.
Sure.
And they take out loans. And it's not that they're becoming a doctor because of the money, but somewhere in their thought process is, I'm going to have a pretty good life because I'm going to be a doctor. I could take out these loans because I'll make enough money to pay them back.
Correct.
And then they get into this place where they do a residency, an internship, and for the first time, they're taken out of the school setting and they're brought into the real world, and they see the way things really happen. And is it fair to say it's not always based on the altruism that got them to pursue this career? In other words, now they're experiencing real world. It's not always just about helping people, is it?
No, not always. I mean, listen, I know of no physician that has gone into medicine for monetary reasons. I know of no one that has done that. Usually it's a calling. Most physicians know that they want to be physicians at a young age. I knew at age 5 that I wanted to be a physician.
Wow. And did you have one of those little toy stethoscopes?
I did. I was a great physician at 5 years of age, yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know what? It's a calling.
Did you drive your parents crazy, like taking their temperature with a toy thermometer?
Yes, yes, yes. My parents could tell you stories about that. Yes.
But orally, you took the temperature.
Orally, not
rectally. Just making sure.
Yes, okay. Please. But, you know, anyway. All physicians, I mean, I think it's a calling for the most part, and everybody goes into medicine, you know, strictly for that reason, just the love of science and medicine and what we could offer and how we could help change and better the world.
Well, let me tell you why I started out by going down that road, because I think a lot of people who do not know many doctors or physicians, they'll say, oh, he's a doctor, all he cares about is the money.
Right.
And that's not the case.
It really never is. I mean,
but there does come a point in many doctors' lives where the pursuit of the money becomes a necessity. Am I right?
Well, it becomes a necessity because if you look at in today's day and age, you have a kid graduating from medical school. They could very easily be, $500,000 in debt. Between the cost of college education, medical education, living expenses, books, et cetera, next thing you know, you're $500,000 in the hole right now. You know, the average cost of a medical school nowadays could be anywhere from fee to $85,000-$90,000 for a year, based if it's a state school or a private school. And that's only tuition expenses. You're not even talking about living expenses.
So doctors don't do what they do because of money.
Correct.
Although it's understandable why many people look at a medical practice and say all they care about is the money.
Correct.
And what I said initially is you really care about people. And it struck me because not every doctor sends out that vibe, even though we know deep down they do.
Correct.
Not every doctor sends out that vibe. But you get to know your patients.
I do.
And they're not just like, I'm going to spend 7 minutes, prescribe a drug, and move on to the next one, right?
No, I could very easily spend 45 minutes with a patient.
Okay. So here's what I know because of our conversations. After being a doctor in family practice for how many years?
This is my 34th year practicing medicine.
So after 30 years, you started to get, what's the word?
I needed a change. I didn't like where medicine was heading.
And is it fair to say you got disillusioned? Did you get tired of it? Did you get frustrated?
Tired, frustrated, disillusioned in the sense that the ones that control medicine now are the suits, the insurance companies. And they kind of dictate the way we practice medicine today. And I don't think any of us as physicians go to medical school to come out and be told how to practice medicine by an insurance company. So it's very, very frustrating. Very, very frustrating.
And you've matured enough to kind of have your own opinion rather than just following the dictum of what you were told.
Without a doubt. Absolutely.
So you took an interesting turn. You didn't walk away from medicine. You went toward weed.
That is correct. That is correct. The green rush.
Yeah. So how'd that happen?
We have over 70,000 Americans die on a yearly basis from both opiate and benzodiazepine overdose. Opiates obviously being narcotics, benzodiazepines being Xanax, Valium, Klonopin.
Painkillers, tranquilizers.
Ambien, exactly. And it needed to stop. One thing really affected me was that within a period of 3 months, friends of ours, two individual couples, their sons both died from a drug overdose. Mm-hmm. And it was shocking. I knew these men since they were young kids, and I said something needs to stop.
They died of drug overdose.
Correct.
But these aren't who we would think of as the stereotypical drug addict.
No, not at all. They were both prescribed opiates for, you know, both had surgeries, orthopedic surgeries, if you will. And I never met anybody that wakes up one morning and says, I'm going to become a drug addict. It just doesn't happen that way. The overwhelming majority, over 90% of all these individuals that become, you know, drug abuse victims that develop a true dependency on opiates and narcotics, it's happened after they were given a real prescription to treat an ailment that they had. And usually within about 3 days of taking opiates, the body starts to crave them. And you very, very easily could become addicted to it. And that's the path that, unfortunately, a lot of people go down. And I knew that there had to be a stop to this.
So we're going to talk at length about medical marijuana.
Perfect.
And what the difference is between medical marijuana and just walking into a shop where it's legal and buying some gummies.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
There's a big difference.
There's a huge difference.
Yeah, and is it fair to say that some doctors who prescribe medical marijuana may not have the expertise that you do?
That is correct. Not everybody has the same expertise. It's one of my passions. I'm very well educated and versed when it comes to cannabis. And it's an incredible medication. It is actually the answer to our opiate and our benzodiazepine addiction and death rate that we have. Nobody has ever died from a cannabis overdose. It's impossible. And when we reconvene, I'll be more than happy to explain.
How receptive is, let's say, the conventional medical field to the message you're sending right now?
Well, it's definitely changing. It's definitely changing. I think all of us as physicians in medicine, we're all sick and tired of the amount of deaths that we see on an annual basis. When you stop to think and you really think about 70,000 people, have died from these drug overdoses. Imagine what these lives could have been, what these lives could have created. Who knows the promises that they had, or these lives, how they affected their spouses, their children, their families. And it's a domino effect. When one person perishes, it affects all of us.
You know, what Kristen and I talk about on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, is how do we get people out of pain?
Right.
And I don't mean just globally. I mean, when we meet an individual who comes in because they want change,
sure,
really what they want is to get out of pain.
Absolutely.
Are you getting people out of pain?
I am. I'm getting people out of pain and getting them off their opiates and their benzodiazepines and strictly medicating them with medical cannabis. And have been very, very successful at it. One of the largest segments of the population that is using medical cannabis today is the 65 and over crowd. We have a 258% increase in that population that is using medical cannabis.
Now, I'm asking you an honest question.
Shoot.
Were these the potheads of the 70s or not?
No, a lot of them were not. Some of them were, but overwhelming
the minority. Is it kind of like,
minority.
Dude, it's legal now?
No, overwhelming the minority. But the 65 and older that consists of the 258% increase are the ones that have never used it. And the reason they want to use it now is because they're tired of having to be dependent on their opiates, their benzos. They hear so much about people dying from overdose with these medications. And a lot of them, they don't like the way they feel, because what happens is you develop a dependence and a tolerance to both opiates and benzos. So what may be helping you at this point in your life, in your illness, in your disease, if you will, maybe 3 or 4 weeks from now, that same dose isn't helping you anymore. And now if you were taking 0.5 milligrams of Xanax, now you may need to go up to 1 milligram.
So the solution becomes the new problem.
That's exactly it. The solution definitely becomes the new problem, and it becomes a very, very dangerous problem because of death that can occur with both opiates and benzodiazepines.
We got a lot to talk about. Huge. I want to also get one more point in here.
Sure.
One of the things that really struck me when we were speaking together with Kristen was that you see this science as so far beyond we're just going to give them marijuana instead of the drug. You're saying, or you said to us, and I want you to repeat it if I have it right, that many people who tried cannabis and said it didn't work didn't use the right strain for their ailment.
That is correct. So there's a huge amount of different strains of cannabis compared to cannabis we had back in the 60s. And the reason we have so many different strains of cannabis is because so many of them have been mixed, if you will, bred together, different strains of cannabis to create specific strains, maybe to treat specific disease.
Such as?
Well, for instance, everybody knows about THC and CBD. They are both cannabinoids. But cannabis contains over 500 known cannabinoids, and we continue to discover more of them and more of them on a regular basis. So everybody knows of THC and CBD, but there's also THCV, THCA, CBC, CBG, CBD that everybody knows of, CBN, and all these are all different cannabinoids.
I have HDTV.
There you go. I hope you get good reception with it. There you go.
I think I'm going to watch the podcast on HDTV.
I might watch it there also.
Good.
So not only do you have the cannabinoids in the plant, but you also have different terpenes. Terpenes are what give plants their smell, be it the way tulips and roses smell, or basil, or gardenias, or rosemary. Those are all terpenes. So we now know that the cannabinoids interact with the terpenes. Depending on the terpene profile of a strain of cannabis usually determines whether that strain is more of an indica or of a sativa. Indicas are more for nighttime use. There's always the goof on indicas that they will put you in the couch. Okay, so they're very sedating. They're great for insomniacs. They're great to use at nighttime. They help with pain. They help with anxiety.
Who's more likely to know this? I'm being sincere with this question. Who's more likely to know this? The average family doctor or Seth Rogen and Snoop Dogg?
Seth Rogen and Snoop Dogg, without a doubt. They are experts at this. They've used it, God knows how many years they've been using it for. But they're experts when it comes to cannabis. And there's huge education that needs to be learned. And obviously a lot of these individuals obviously self-medicate, so they know what works for them and what doesn't work
so
for them.
So people need to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely.
Even if they feel like I tried it and it didn't work, or I already use CBD.
Correct. Correct. And a lot of the CBD that people are purchasing that's over the counter, unless it's coming with a certificate of authenticity and it gives you a lab analysis of what's in there, if it doesn't come with that, then I guarantee you're buying garbage that probably contains zero CBD in it, okay?
It's so big money now.
It's huge money. It's $1 billion industry.
If
absolutely.
You can sell something that says CBD on the label,
correct.
You're going to make money if you market it well.
Exactly. And you have to remember that none of this is regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. So they could put whatever they want on it, and they don't get into trouble. There's no hassles for them. They're just making money.
I look forward to having you as a regular guest, because there's a lot we have to talk about.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
So, Dr. Carlos Levy, it is my pleasure to have conversations like this with you.
Thank you.
This was the first of many.
Very good. Okay. It's my pleasure to be here.